Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Pranams are about the light within you, the great divinity. Rick Bohr sent me a funny the other day. It's entitled The Haircut. A teenage boy had just passed his driver's test and inquired of his father as to when they could discuss his use of the car. The father said, "You make a deal with us, son. You bring your grades up to C and B average, study your Bible a little, and get your hair cut. Then we'll talk about the car." The boy thought about that for a moment, decided he'd settle for the offer, and they agreed on it. After about 6 weeks, the father said, "Son, you brought your grades up, and I observed that you've been studying your Bible, but I'm disappointed you haven't had your hair cut." The boy said, "You know, Dad, I've been thinking about that. I've noticed in my studies of the Bible that Samson had long hair. John the Baptist had long hair. Moses had long hair. And there's even strong evidence that Jesus had long hair." And the dad said, "Did you notice that they walked everywhere they went?" Dads are sometimes geniuses. Reading from Paramahansa Yogananda, his commentary on the Gita. It's entitled Experiment. "Close your eyes and picture the sun as a small saucer in the sky." So close your eyes, picture the sun as a small saucer in the sky. Then by visualization, make the sun as big as the whole sky. Making it as big as the whole sky. Then by expanded mental image of the sun, as big as eternity, stretching it out as far as the mind can see. Far, far beyond the most distant planets, still you will see eternity and space ever expanding beyond that mentally enlarged, spherical, finite image of the sun. It will become evident to you that the biggest finite sphere that can be imagined is not as big as eternity that has no end. It's true, isn't it? As we try to imagine what infinite is, what eternity is, whatever that image is we have in our mind, infinity and eternity is bigger than that. Master goes on, "All finite dreams of creation exist in the formless consciousness of the ever-existent, ever-conscious, ever-new God of bliss. But his cosmic consciousness can exist by itself without the dream forms of creation. All finite objects produce the illusion of being something beyond them. Therefore, mortals ask, what is beyond the infinite? The answer is nothing. Naught could be bigger than the infinite that is the container of all else. As the thread hidden behind the beads of a necklace, and as the dreamer's consciousness is secreted behind the garlands of dream images, so the divine coordinator remains hid unseen behind the dream lies all creation." Behind the dream lay of creation. As the thread is the support of a row of beads, and the dreamer's mind upholds the dream images, so God consciousness sustains all the dream appearance of creation. Going to continue with Master, Chapter 7, Stanza 8, Spiritual Interpretation. "Flowing waters, the shining moon, the sun, the truths of the scriptures are expounded by wise men. The roaring sounds in the ether and the deeds of valiant men, all can be presented by shadows lights, sounds of a motion picture. God, similarly, on the screen of human consciousness, all the real motion pictures of the world. The 8th to the 12th stanzas of this chapter describe how the cosmic dreamer, God, sustains all the manifestations of his cosmic dream. Man lives in a very small dream world. He cannot conceive of the vast dream of God. Man's little consciousness cannot picture the vast power of his cosmic consciousness. In the daytime, a man looking at the sun sees only a portion of the sky. All objects on earth are invisible to him, except those few that lie within the range of his vision. By the aid of a telescope, man can view the stars, the bands around Saturn, the many moons of Jupiter, and the telescope man can see the stars, the bands around Saturn, the many moons of Jupiter. With the aid of a microscope, man can also see millions of crawling microscopic germs in a drop of water. In the dreamland, man can transform his mind into a microscope to see germs, or can create giant mental telescope to see the furthest astral or physical worlds. The ordinary man during the day sees a shining portion of the earth. At night, in the light of the moon, he sees another very different dream picture of this earth. At night, he can create a small dream of his own in the world of his subconscious mind. During conscious calmness, with closed eyes, and during deep sleep, man feels only his existence without perception of restless thoughts or sensations of sense objects. Man is therefore confined during the stillness in a little space. During his perception of the waking dream world or the dream world in slumber, he remains confined in dreams. The ordinary man therefore has no adequate vision of the vastness of the physical universe, nor of the astral and causal cosmoses. The yogi with closed eyes dismisses his thoughts and sensations. The yogi with closed eyes dismisses his thoughts and sensations. When he is able to do that, he finds within himself the knowing, the knower, the known, all converted into one perception of ecstasy. Experiencing soul bliss, the devotee feels his consciousness circling in space. Then he feels the cosmic vibration manifesting as the audible cosmic sound and the visible cosmic light. It is at this time that the yogi's intuitive spherical awareness begins to spread with ever-expanding cosmic sound, cosmic light, and cosmic consciousness. Then the yogi learns to expand his being into spirit, and it is cosmic consciousness to project his sphere of audition into the realm of the cosmic sound, to enlarge the visible inner life force into cosmic life force. It is then that he finds his soul no longer confined in the little dream of sleep or in the dream of the world. Instead, the yogi's soul not only feels the cosmic consciousness in all creation, but beyond it, to the farthest reaches of the vibrationless sphere. The yogi, at one with both the infinite and its finite creation, perceives the cosmic dream and his own body as projections of his infinite consciousness. The yogi, being one with God, beholds his consciousness appearing in the sapidity in the water, the luminescence of the moon and the sun, the cosmic sound and light roaming in the universes, and the eternal ether, perceptions of all sentient beings and saintly souls, and the Om of truth vibrations of the Vedic scriptures, and all of the other books of deep wisdom. The yogi perceives the cosmic energy emanating from God's consciousness to be sustaining the vitality of all human bodies. At the motion picture beam supports all images and objects in a motion picture, and as the dreamer's consciousness upholds his dream images and objects, so the consciousness of God converts itself into the cosmic being that maintains all images and objects of the universal dreamland. These are tremendous, tremendous teachings that Master is giving us. And of course, he speaks out of his own realization, his own divine consciousness. He's not just repeating something that he has seen in a book or heard from his own guru. It's something that he experiences and experiences on a daily basis. You might think that these are distant and far events from you, and yet everything that is described in here is deeply embedded in your own consciousness. You already have it, only you don't realize it. You don't feel it. You don't experience it. For those people who look about them in this world and look for evidence of God, they see the evil. They see all of man's misdeeds, the violence in nature, and so on. And says, I don't see a creative hand in all of that. To some degree, I understand that. And I realize that in the physical nature, you're never going to find definite proof of God. Now, on the other hand, we look out at this marvelous universe. We see creation. We see all the fantastic mechanisms that are in operation every day just to keep one body sustained. The tremendous intelligence that has gone into all creation. And I think for any reflective mind that you would have to say, for all of this to come about as happenstance, just by chance, is not possible. It's not possible. There are actually mathematicians who have tried to calculate how long it would take through just simple chance for everything that has fallen into creation to come about. And it's actually much, much bigger than the 4.5 billion years that they estimate this universe has existed in. Imagine that, even longer than that, just through simple chance. The fact is, we are fantastic creations. And once we see it, we can easily see the hand of the divine creator. However, there are things that are in every one of us that cries out for something more than this, something that we can truly encompass within our own consciousness in order to prove that the divine is, even now, something that is active inside of you, that is always going on around you. I'd like to read to you, we're working very hard on creating books for Mother's Talks. And there are several who are actively working at bringing this about. And I have 7 different books conceived all around Mother's teachings. One of them is Mother's Meeting with Saints, and all of her stories about the tremendous saints that she met and experiences. But this one has to do with Paramahansa Yogananda and with a great disciple of his, James J. Lind, who Master named Rajasi Yanakananda. So in here, Mother is describing a Kriya ceremony. Rajasi left body consciousness during a Kriya ceremony. I remember that one time, Master was giving a Kriya initiation in Los Angeles. And when you practice Kriya over a long period of time, you can practice it very little before you go into ecstasy. And at a certain time during your development, the life force will immediately leave your body. Well, Rajasi was sitting in the front row, and Master was telling of all the different devotees how to do Kriya. Well, Rajasi, because he had been doing Kriya for many years, was able to leave his body. He was a master in his own right. And he slumped down immediately. Well, Bernard rushed over and pressed the jugular vein in order to bring the life force back into the body. The yogis have this method where they can return life to the body. So when Rajasi went in front of Master to receive his initiation, Master laughed at him, and Rajasi had a bald head, and Master patted his head and said, "Well, you left us for a little while, didn't you? It is nothing to be afraid of, you see, because the astral body is attached to the physical body by the spinal centers and also at the navel. And this long astral cord holds you to the physical body. And after a given time, you return to the body. And if you have your full attention upon God, there is absolutely no danger, no need to worry at all." And then Mother quotes from Revelations, "And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. And he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not, I am the first and the last." You see, these are universal experiences. This is absolutely essential to any thinking about God consciousness. God consciousness does not belong to just any particular religion or any particular country or language or anything of the sort. You see the world arguing over which one has the right religion. But God being universal, must be universal, must go beyond religion. Mother used to say that God made man and man made religion. It is religion that is the teachings that ideally are implanted into human consciousness in order to guide the mind toward the freedom that it should experience in God consciousness. It's a form of spiritual laziness and definitely ignorance to say only have faith that you have been converted and it shall be so. Faith is the beginning because it sets our sights upon a goal. We have faith in part, we have experience in part. Many, many people have had some form of God experience in their lives. They have had a prayer answered. They have been relieved of some tremendous weight or difficulty. They have had been uplifted in consciousness and seen beyond this mortal world of ours. And as a result of that, perhaps they have put their feet upon a path to realize more. If it's happened within the context of a particular church, or if they have a particular religion in mind, they may ascribe all the attributes of that experience to that church or that religion. But this is not so, because as we read the accounts of saints and sages all around the world, they give very similar accounts of what it is like to be in this uplifted state of God consciousness. Whether it is Hindu, whether it is Christian, whether it is Buddhist or Muslim, you can see that the accounts are very similar. Destroy all the books on religion, and the religious-minded, those who have a spiritual bent, will rediscover those truths. But fortunately, we don't have to rediscover the wheel. We don't have to rediscover all of these principles. So many of them have been laid out before us. And whether you feel more drawn to the Christian scriptures, or the Hindu, to the Buddhist, or to Islam, you find there the nuggets of truth, because oftentimes there are other things that have been interpolated into the teachings so that it's watered down. Sometimes there are descriptions of the physical realm that are actually alluding to some greater truth and some greater reality. So just to read it as something that is describing the outer world is a mistake. For instance, in the Old Testament, it talks about the wind. And the wind bloweth from the south and turneth around and goeth in the other direction, completing a circuit. The wind here means the breath. And the breath, even more so, is brought into the spine and is seen as revolving around the spine. Now, this is not a physical breath. This is the pranic energy, the life energy, that is contained within us, and it is circulated around the spine. And through that medium, we advance in consciousness. These are great teachings that are given to us. So they have been given in the Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament, and in the New Testament. We find them in the Bhagavad Gita. We find them in the Buddhist scriptures. We find them everywhere. And so we know that there are saints everywhere that have these experiences. So let us give up this narrow-mindedness, this idea that only certain have these experiences, and you have to belong to a certain church before God finds favor with you. These are parochial ideas that need to be part of the dustbin of history. We are entering into a new time of thinking. And in that thinking, we will recognize the universality of these teachings, that it is not predicated upon just a particular teacher. I have been reading a book that one of the devotees had been reading and recommended to me, and it's a wonderful book about a saint. I say a saint, and truly he was. He had tremendous power, and he had tremendous ability to know things, and many of his teachings were of the highest sort. But he didn't live the life. He had many sexual encounters with those who followed after him. He would discard them easily. He had a child and so on. And this from a Swami. This from somebody who was supposed to have taken vows of celibacy and dedicated to their life to God only. He was sued successfully, and they were awarded over $1 million in the lawsuit. And his own lawyer agreed that he had done these things. The Swami had done these things. The two must go together, the idealism along with the behavior. Now, there are many who slip along the way. They have faults. They get going in the wrong direction. And the real key is, do they have humility? Do they admit to what they did as being wrong? Do they do corrective action where it is possible? And then do they put their feet back on the path once again? So you can tell, we were in Glacier National Park, and there was a fatal attack by a bear of a person who was killed during this attack. And they talked about the bear's intention, that the bear, if the bear had been startled, as he probably was, and he was protecting his own territory, then they don't do anything about the bear. But if the bear shows a history and a predisposition towards attacking people and going after them and injuring or killing them, then that bear they may have to kill in order to protect the people who are in the area. So they look at the motivation, not just the act itself. And so when we see a person's behavior, what is it inside of them? Is it a history of going and going against the laws again and again and again, and apparently with little or no remorse? Or is that individual truly sorry for what they have done, have tried to make amends where possible, and then moved on from there and got right back onto the path and kept going? And for that person, We can have a lot of compassion and understanding. It doesn't say what they did was right, not at all. They themselves have admitted that it was not right. But we can have compassion for that one. For that one who continues to harm others with apparently no real regret and no turning away from that and getting back onto the path, that one has betrayed their calling, particularly if they are a spiritual teacher. There are many who have held themselves up as high and have not kept to those standards. And this is such a tremendous disservice, because it gives ammunition to those who are looking to find fault with anybody who leads a religious or a spiritual life. And it discourages those who have had faith in that individual, who have tried with all sincerity to follow their teachings. Now, I say this individual was not all bad and was not all good by any means. They certainly did some good, but perhaps in the end, they actually ended up doing more harm. More harm because they were a symbol for many and a teacher for many of this higher consciousness and this higher life. So how can we tell whether an individual has that developed consciousness? Is somebody who is worth listening to? Papa used to say sometimes when people would criticize him or the ashram, what, are we to have two horns on our head? In other words, are we to be extraordinary looking? Something that is so obvious that you could tell that person from any other? And one time, Papa said, when he was asked, was that person God realized? And Ram Dass said, I don't know. Or rather, he said, Ram Dass doesn't know, because he's always referred to himself in the third person. He said, it's sometimes hard to tell. So it isn't always easy to know if that one has been in divine consciousness. What I can tell you from my own experience, from being around two such highly, fully developed souls as Mother and Swami Satchidananda, that there is a way of knowing, that there is a way that you are lifted up, you feel the power, you feel the transformation when you are around them. One time Mother said that she was tested around Master, and it was a real test. Was he what he said he was? And I believe she may have heard some things about him, and there are so many things that are passed around different masters, but you can't believe everything that you hear. But it really put her into a tailspin after many, many years of being with him. And so she contemplated on it, and she thought about it. I know one thing was that toward the end of his life, the master had some very painful physical conditions, and that at one time he was taking some pain medication, and many people would be shocked that a spiritual master would take anything in the form of a pain medication. But there it is. So what do you do with that? Mother went inside, and she thought about what he had done for her. She thought about the tremendous moments of transformation that she had had in his presence. She thought about the healing that she had received from her, and not just herself, but her daughter as well, who had fallen off of a chair when her little brother had accidentally hit it and knocked her off and she fell on her head. And the doctor pronounced that she would never be right if she lived. She would be brain damaged. And so Mother wrote to Master and asked for his prayers. And he gave his prayers in response. And her daughter, Barbara, turned out to be all right, that she did live, and she didn't have any brain damage. So Mother reflected on these things. Mother had tuberculosis at one point. She had two spots the size, I believe she said, of half-dollar coins on her lungs, as proved by the x-rays that were taken. And they were considering putting her into what is called at that time a sanatorium, That was a place where people with TB would go to. And so she wrote to Master. She had these three young children. She was the caregiver. And what would she do? And she was asking for his prayers. And the next time that she went in, both of those spots of tuberculosis were completely gone. There is no sign of them anymore. And so she was able to carry on with her mothering duties. So these were all things that happened for her. And things that Master had communicated to her in spirit, in mind, through activity. And she knew that her life was totally transformed and changed because of him. And that settled all the doubt in her mind. When I saw Mother in the nursing home when she was going through a very difficult time, she had had the shingles so terribly, one half of her face, it looked like somebody with leprosy, open and oozing sores. They had to sew a patch of skin onto one eye so that it would not explode. She would just convulse in pain as this shingles was just right in her head there, and she just had no protection at all. She had also had a stroke on the other side of her body. And so her mouth drooped, and she had no use of her hand or her leg on that side. She was really in bad shape. And when I went to the nursing home, I'm not even sure that she recognized me. She was looking at me. And we had a little bit of conversation. And when I left, it really shook me up. I don't know if it created a doubt about her. I just didn't simply understand what was going on and why she was having to go through such a terrible thing. So I went home and I sat on my meditation blanket and I put it to God. What is going on here? And I sat there for a long time. And finally, at this third eye point, at the ajna, the point between the eyebrows, there is a wonderful vision. You call it a vision. Words really are difficult because it was more real than anything that I see in this world. The mother appeared to me there, and she was radiant. She was beautiful. In fact, there was light extending beyond her in every direction as far as the eye could see. And she said, "Do you not know I am in my light body?" And I felt such freedom. I felt such joy. I felt such bliss at seeing her in this way. And this was a moment that totally changed because she went through so many things in the body. But I was changed because I never doubted, I never mistook Mother's physical body for who she was in God. So we look beyond the things of this world. We look beyond the things of our own mind even, because mind is limited until it is united with God consciousness. Then it receives access to all wisdom, to all light, to all understanding. So we'll never understand everything just simply with the mind. That's not possible. We can read books, read Master's books. We read writings that Mother or transcribed from her talks and so on. And they're wonderful. They convey a spiritual power with them. And particularly when we are spiritually attuned and in the right frame of mind, we get it. We receive that power. We receive that upliftment. Otherwise, they're just words. But when we're inwardly attuned, there's something that is conveyed that lifts us up. But it is not just in the words themselves. It is the spiritually charged consciousness of the Divine Master that we are reading the words of that lifts us up into a higher realm. And as a result of that, we gain access once again into that higher region. This is absolutely essential. Everything that we talk about, everything that we're focused on, is all about having God experience. Because when you have God experience, It is so clearly different from anything else that you do, think, or say in this world. God consciousness transforms you. It lifts you up into higher spheres. It makes you feel the bliss and the light of God's consciousness. It informs you, but not just in an ordinary human kind of a way about thinking about something. It comes to you whole and complete and unfolds before your consciousness. And sometimes the truth of God comes in such simple ways that you could convey it in the language of a child. And yet, those who are looking to be clever, those who are looking to be simply entertained, may completely miss the truth and the power that's contained within those teachings. Jesus talked about that when he said, "Unto the childlike, these great truths are given." And then he said something very interesting. I don't remember the exact quote, but he said, he conveyed that unto those who are well wedded to the mind, those who are clever and intelligent, they don't see this at all. They miss this truth completely. Now that's a complete paraphrase, not a quote. But it conveys what he was talking about. It tells us that to become simple means to become quiet in the mind, open, receptive. That those who try to capture God with their minds, with their intelligence, will never be able to do it because they have a tiny, puny little net to try to capture infinity. And it's such a ridiculous notion. The true use of the mind is to turn it in meditation and make it quiet, because what happens in the quiet mind is it begins to reflect all of those attributes that are above it. True quiet mind then reveals the mountain of God consciousness, the stars within your spinal consciousness, the moon of intuition at your solar plexus, the sun at the ajna, at the third eye point between your eyebrows. All of these become revealed to you. When I close my eyes, I see that divine light radiating, and it goes throughout all the brain. It gives you a particular way of viewing things, because ordinarily you couldn't actually see a light that is penetrating through your brain. Your eyes are not capable of that. But with your inner vision, with your inner eye, it all becomes revealed. All of these experiences that Master talks about in this reading are all within the range of your intuitive eye. The eye that is at the forehead, the eye that is the doorway to the kingdom of heaven within you. You see how immediate, you see how personal, you see how powerful this truth is. And so if we do not practice our meditation, if we do not go deeper inside, sometimes we sit for meditation, but we don't go deeper. We just stay on the surface. Demand of yourself to go beyond just the surface of consciousness. You want to go into that superconscious mind where you have these profound experiences. You can just paddle around on the surface of the water for all of your life and never get anywhere in terms of growing spiritually. You have to go deeper. You have to soar higher in order to really transform yourselves into the spiritual being that in truth you already are, only you just have not realized it. So let us make that determination. Let us go into the quiet laboratory of our own consciousness until it becomes so still and quiet that it does reflect all of this higher consciousness. You hear the Om or the Amen that is coming in through the back of your head. You see the light at the ajna. You are lifted up then to the crown of the head, and you feel an expansion of consciousness that goes beyond time and space, but goes beyond any image or form, goes into the absolute pure consciousness of divine, the divine being. All of these things are available to you when you practice the science of religion. So with those words, I pronounce you, I bow to the light within you. I pray to the infinite that that light awaken inside of you, that you realize it fully, that you go beyond the things of time and space. You go beyond all form. You go into the pure being of your own soul and spirit. These things are real. Do not treat them as sidelights or as something just simply to read about or to practice, but just stay on the surface of. Go the whole way, and you will be rewarded with such tremendous bliss, such tremendous beauty, such tremendous revelations, all derived right from within yourself.